Effin' Birds is a daily comic strip that pairs angst about the shit show we live in with beautiful drawings of birds. Find it on your social media platform of choice, in good bookstores, and at effinbirds.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I don't have a pun, but that rhymed. I'm a professional. This is the Soft Revolution Podcast. My name is Torkel Campbell, singer-songwriter, in case you couldn't tell.
You've been writing so many songs that you're just like out. Like
everything rhymes now. I'm like that Martin Short impersonation of Irving Berlin. I don't. You're probably too young to have seen that, but the Michael Healy, you know what
I'm
talking
cool.
about.
And too cool. And too cool.
Give me a C, a bouncy C. I hope is adjusting to life in the fall. And that if you have offspring, they are giving you as little trouble as you'd hoped in their return to education. And this week we have, I have also been scared, horrified, but most of all inspired and just blown away by what is happening in Iran with the young women of Iran and the men too, which we'll talk about later. And it's just been on my mind a ton. And of course it's been on Ali's mind as an Iranian person, with many, many family there. And today we have an incredible guest, an artist to talk about it, who really sort of exemplifies how much an artist can bring to a conversation like this, which might be deemed initially political, but is in fact deeply emotional. And she's going to talk about that. Her name is Taray Garami. How'd I do, Ali?
Taray Garami.
Almost there. Or Taray Garami.
Almost there, not bad.
Taray Garami.
Or Tara Grami.
Yes. And she is an amazing actor and artist, playwright, Governor General Award-winning playwright. Nominated playwright. Should have won.
You know what? Fuck that. Should have won.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm going to start doing. It's just, if you've been nominated, you should have won. You're a winner as far as I'm concerned.
Well, especially her play Mahmoud is amazing.
Yes.
It's like amazing.
Has been kind enough to join us for a chat. She's in Los Angeles where she lives, and she's going to talk to us about the importance of what's happening right now to her life, to her family, to her people, but also the importance of it to all of us. And the importance of something called social media, which is often, as you know, attacked on this show, but then often makes its existential argument in cases like this, where it really does act as a tool to disseminate freedom and democracy and rebellion against oppressive forces. And Tara talks brilliantly about the power of social media right now and why you, as a person, whether you're Iranian or not, should be using your social media feed right now to amplify what's happening in Iran and to support the young women and men of Iran, because they are incredible. So we're going to have a really emotional, beautiful chat with her coming up. Please stick around for that, because I really think it's an important conversation. And I know it's dear to Ali's heart as well. But really, like, look, this show's called Soft Revolution. In my mind, what's happening in Iran right now, that's soft revolution. Using your body, using your voice to say, I am not going to fucking tolerate this anymore. I am going to dance. I am going to take off the clothing you told me to wear. I'm going to stamp on your photograph. The use of the artistic impulse in these protests makes me weep when I think about it. It is so beautiful. And to me, somebody asked me what soft revolution was, I think, a couple of weeks ago on this show, and I gave some bullshit response, or maybe it was on another podcast I was on. Soft revolution is what's happening in Iran right now. There's no guns. There's no missiles. There's no leaders. There's no men in green uniforms pretending to be big shots. There's human beings putting their bodies and lives on the line and using their bodies and their voices to express beautiful yearning for something better in their lives. And that is soft revolution. So we're going to have a great conversation with Tara coming up. But first, Ali, you now are in Denver, the Mile High City. One of the first places I ever bought legal marijuana. That's what I can tell you about Denver. Also, we were just having a conversation. It's very hard to breathe for me when I do shows there. It's got nothing to do with the marijuana, folks. Let's not make a linkage there.
It exacerbates things, though, doesn't it? It must.
No, it opens your
trachea. It must exacerbate something.
Hey, listen, ask Bob Marley. You think his singing was all right? Okay, thank you. I rest my case.
It was very all right. Yeah.
You're in Denver, back on the road. Doing your show. And you're in America.
So America.
I guess my first question to you is,
yeah,
what are the vibes you're picking up? I'm sure you're sitting in your hotel room away from your partner and your dog staring at CNN way too often. Where do you feel, what do you feel about what's happening in the States right now in terms of Trump, in terms of whether Biden is going to stick around? What's your vibe on the political mood there right now, talking to Americans and being in that country?
Well, the tragedy of Hurricane Fiona that was hitting Florida predominantly, the one thing that kind of like gave me just like a little bit of like, oh, this was interesting, was seeing DeSantis and Biden kind of like, you know, actually kind of working together. And in the midst of
shaking
it, Biden
hands,
coming
like
out,
two civilized
shaking hands
human beings.
And Biden
Imagine
coming out as kind of like, I don't want to say the political winner, but really coming out as like someone who was on top of things. And there's two internet memes that I'd love for you to look up. One was Biden talking to this like guy in Florida, and he was like, nobody fucks with a Biden, you know, and they catch him on audio saying that. I like that. And then there's this other thing going on with DeSantis. He wore these like white rain boots, right? And there's like this, they look redonkulous, right? This reminds me of Dukakis with the helmet, right? He looks fucking ridiculous. And there's this meme now where they're trying to extend the boots up as higher and higher and higher, and now it's like literally like it's the best. So please look up Ron DeSantis white rain boots and you'll have a really good time. But you know, America is a country full of contradictions. America is a country, and I've visited a lot, and you've probably done it on tour. Every situation is different, every circumstance is different, every city is different. As I was flying into Colorado, I was like, wow, this is a blue state.
Yeah.
And just the notion of like a blue state, a red state, that like this imaginary border that really like it's conjured up, an idea separates political ideologies. I go, wait a second, it can't be that simple. People are, at the end of the day, human beings, regardless of where they are, wanting the same things. But I've loved Americans. I've always loved Americans.
Friendliest people in the world. I'm not even going to hear any arguments about it. Friendliest people in the world.
No, totally. Amazing. Amazing. But yeah, I mean, still to this day, I'll tell you one crazy thing. So I had to get healthcare for this tour.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck, folks? Why? Like at some point, like you're like, what has the insurance lobby done that it has gotten to the point that this is like, yeah, totally, give me this.
Yep.
Finding a health insurance plan is the biggest crock of shit experience ever in the history of humankind.
Well,
what?
Interestingly, though, you know, this is the problem: is that in our country, we're not going to get too deep into this. But here in Canada, and I know in the UK as well, where I just was and staying with two people who work for the NHS,
not the NHL, not Hockey Canada.
Not Hockey Canada. These nationalized healthcare systems are being choked out of existence. They are being defunded to the extent that they can no longer serve the communities they're sure supposed to serve. And this is not an accident. This is intentional, because at least in the case of the United Kingdom, it is a way of making the argument for privatization to happen. And you know, that's the thing about
to
the
have
States.
If you
have the money in the United States, you get the best medical care anywhere in the world. You can walk into a pristine, you know, hotel-like hospital and walk up to a nice receptionist who will show you to a doctor's office in 10 minutes. And, you know, but that, as you say, Ali, costs a fucking fortune.
A fucking fortune. A family of like a wealthy, affluent family of four, if they were to have to get non-employer-based healthcare, you're looking at like, I'm talking about family ones sitting, their parents are in their 50s, maybe 60s, kids. You're looking at like $50,000 a year.
Absolute insanity. I mean, my daughter.
And I will also add this, they take tax off here in this country. So I just want everybody who has like a, if you're an American listening and you're like, yeah, but in Canada, yes, they have socialized medicine, but my God, the taxes. Or if you're a Canadian saying, yeah, okay, it's all fucked up over there, but taxes are lower. No, no. I get a paycheck and I'm telling you, 40% of it is gone to the government.
Right.
And no healthcare. What the fuck?
Craziness.
Anyways.
Listen, speaking of craziness, I do want to briefly go over before we talk to Tara, a couple of crazy, in the crazy file, we have what's happening in Britain with Liz Truss, a woman who can't even be bothered to name herself Elizabeth. Someone of so little charisma and intellect and any sort of qualification to be the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And yet, just when you thought that like Boris Johnson couldn't be made to look legitimate in any way, they managed to find Liz Truss. This is one of the biggest political collapses in modern history. The Conservative Party went from being slightly in the lead in front of Labour to 30 points behind them.
Yeah, I was going to say that poll was
within
insane.
Within 1 week when Liz Truss announced that she would massively cut taxes for the top 1% earning people in the United Kingdom. I think they were going to be taken down to a 45% tax rate, which is
40% from 45.
40 from 45. And then when the country reacted with horror, they reversed themselves within 24 hours of announcing the thing. As artists, like, I only want to touch on this briefly, but I don't know if any of you've seen a show called The Thick of It. But if you haven't, please go and watch it. It's by Armando Iannucci, who also made Veep. Veep is a kind of American adaptation of The Thick of It. You can find it on BritBox. I think it might be on Netflix as well in some countries. And it's about British politics. And literally everything in it is happening. I mean, these people are beyond satire. Is there any hope for democracy at this point? Like when you have Liz Truss, when you have people of such low standing being in charge, how do you keep a vibrant democracy thrive?
Well, they're going to get the boot. I mean, as you mentioned, they're getting the... No.
Or John Tory, for example, a man who has failed at being mayor of Toronto for almost 12 years now. He's going to get reelected.
And he's going to coast. He's coasting. He's coasting.
And he's an absolute waste of space. So how do we get people to not feel like, what's the point? Do you know what I mean? Like when you're talking about going into politics, and I know that's still something you want to do at some point in your life, how the fuck do you get anyone to care?
Well, the interesting thing is, and this is something that alludes to what Tara and I, and sort of the three of us talk about, is that like, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, that people are politically hungry, people are politically engaged, people have the appetite for it, but their expression of their politics has moved from the ballot box to their smartphone. And they express their politics from, you know,
they think
retweets,
that's enough.
Likes. They think that's enough. And you know what? In some respects, in the case of what we're talking
Iran,
about with
it
Iran,
is, right?
It's
the only thing
it's the vibe.
Yeah.
It's the vibe. But the thing is, like, this municipal election in Toronto is going to be one of the lowest turnout experiences of all time. It's going to be probably
and
in the 20-30%.
That's really a disgrace, man.
Like, I don't know anybody, any of my friends who lament about public transportation in Toronto, who lament about zoning laws in Toronto, who lament, you know, the trash being on the ground, who lament homelessness, who lament this stuff, I don't know any of them they're going to vote. And if they vote who they're going to vote for, they don't even know. They don't know what's going on. So this is why I think the next big electoral reform movement has to be move the vote to the smartphone. We have done in Canada, there has been when
then how do I vote?
When Justin, this is you're going to get, you could use your wife's cell phone. Or of course we're going to have a circumstance where you, we're not going to eliminate voting by paper.
No, but seriously,
but
Ali, because that sounds cute.
No.
Like,
I'm not joking
about
this.
Senior citizens
no, it isn't
who
cute.
Don't know how
it
to use
cute.
Smart. My mother would not be able to vote under
I'm
those
not,
circumstances.
Torque, we're not going to replace it, but we have to give people the opportunity that they can vote on their smartphone. If you could bank on your smartphone, if you could like check your taxes on your smartphone. If you could verify my identity in every respect, we need to create a mechanism in which people can vote through their phone. I'm telling you, if you do that, that's when you're going to have it. And I know you think it's some wild-eyed, pie-in-the-sky idea, but in 2015, the Canadian government, they came in with a promise of electoral reform. I'm sorry that they didn't do it. They need to be thinking about it. But one of the things that they did was they did a real big research study on the use of the smartphone to vote. And you incorporate blockchain. There's a lot of cybersecurity technology that has been improved.
And you're telling me it's not going to be hijacked by some guy sitting in a boiler room somewhere who's just going to like, affect the, you know, the Russians aren't going to come and be able to manipulate people's
smartphones.
The Russians are already
manipulating elections. The Chinese are already manipulating elections. But I think the process of actually voting can be and must be. We must figure out how to make it accessible. We must figure out the act of voting to become as simple as a retweet. Because that is how we roll. This is who we are. We have become one with machine. So you can either like accept that fact as a representative body, which is there to represent the people, which is there to meet people where they are, or you can huff and puff and say, well, I don't know why these youth aren't voting, blah, 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 because it's like, that's just not how we roll anymore. I could do everything on my fucking phone. Everything on my phone. But I can't do the most important thing? What the fuck?
Well, very salient to what we're going to speak to Tara about as well. Let's do this quickly because it warrants very little comment. But generally, I avoid this kind of shit. I'm not here to...
I don't even know where you're going to talk about it.
I know. But this isn't it's not a pop culture podcast. I don't care what celebrities, I don't give a shit if Adam Levine's having sex with someone. I don't care, people. I don't care. And I don't care what this, I didn't know who the Try Guys were until for some reason.
I don't know.
There are people on YouTube. This guy slept with someone and now he's lost his job. I mean, whatever's going on out there, you're all completely gone bonkers. Give me a break. But, this really did warrant, I think, a brief conversation. Kanye West, the artist formerly known as Kanye West, known simply as Ye, which for those of you who don't know that is a nickname for cocaine. But I don't think he meant it that way, but maybe he did. He certainly acts like it. He premiered some of his, in my opinion, quite hideous clothing at Paris Fashion Week, and did so wearing a t-shirt which read, White Lives Matter.
Standing beside Candace Owens.
Standing beside well-known right-wing firebrand and absolute
idiot
Candace Owens. You know, you and I are Kanye fans.
I
think
Tara's
a big
Kanye
fan
too.
Music. My opinion, Kanye West has made some of the most extraordinary music of the last 50 years. So I know lots of you are going to disagree, but that's what art is like. We all have our tastes, but I really think an argument can be made.
But we're right.
He's a brilliant artist or was at one time. He even, to me, has done a lot of this kind of thing or things in this area that while everybody was very pissed off about, kind of resonated for me in the sense that it was, I do believe that there is an aspect of being a rock star that is about being deliberately incendiary and deliberately provocative and deliberately offensive. I miss that in rock and roll. I think it's something that has become too rare. And I appreciate artists who are willing to put their dignity and their reputations on the line so I don't have to be the kind of people who say shit that other people don't want to say. And he's done that in his life. However, he's also a malignant narcissist.
Yeah.
And the wearing of that t-shirt to me is where his narcissism jumped over his artistry
mm-hmm.
and became his featuring quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not interested in the work moving forward of a man who doesn't understand why, as a black man, given a fucking massive platform in front of the entire fucking world, why he thinks it's clever, remotely clever, or remotely helpful, or remotely interesting, or remotely beautiful to wear such a thing. It's just beyond me. And he just looks like a rich guy who doesn't have a fucking clue about what life is.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested anymore. And I'm sort of, I might have to just cancel Kanye.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, I really, like, fuck this guy. Having said that, fuck the press for constantly, relentlessly exposing us to the very worst takes in today's cultural scene.
Constantly. Well, this is why Tara is like fucking fighting to get to get this revolution amplified, because we're competing with Kanye.
With Kanye. Like, anyone who printed an article about Kanye wearing a White Lives Matter t-shirt and didn't fucking big up what's happening in Iran and get someone to talk about it and write an article about it, fuck you and fuck your publication. It is just not good enough. And he's cynically, stupidly thinking you're stupid and cynical enough to print that story, and you are. And you should be ashamed of your fucking selves, because letting this guy do that to the discourse, letting him do that to something that matters to the black community, to all of us, not just to the black community, to the human community. You're in on this. You're in on this con game. Soft Revolution is brought to you by Effin' Birds. Effin' Birds is a delightful daily comic strip that pairs profane musings on the shit show we live in with beautiful illustrations of birds. Now, you may say to yourself, what the fuck are you talking about? Who would do such a thing? How is a bird illustration in any way relatable to profane musings on the shit show that we live in? Torquil and Allie and Aaron, who makes this stuff, what do you want about? Well, some things in life have to remain a mystery. All I can tell you is that when you go and see Effin' Birds, you will laugh and you will find it strangely appropriate. There's something about a bird swearing at you that brings you down to ground level. And God knows, we all need to start from there. Now, every week, Allie Moman, in one of the great sort of passive-aggressive moves of all time, makes me responsible for these ads and sends me an illustration from Effin' Birds, which I then read to myself. But whenever I'm doing it, I think of it in Allie's voice, because I think maybe he's sending me these cards, not just with the purpose of me telling you about the incredible Effin' Birds brand. You can go to effinbirds.com, EffinBrids.com, or you can go to bookstores, or you can find it online. Not just because of that. He's not just sending me cards because of that. He's sending me cards to let me know how he feels about me. And if that's not true, Allie, please let me know. Okay, here's this week's card. And this is a good one. This is one you could hang actually in your front window if you wanted to get into it with your neighbors. You could totally put this up in your window, and it would, some people would be like, yeah. And other people would be like, you talking to me? And here it is. It's a bird of prey. I've seen more of them lately. I don't know whether it's because there's more roadkill in the fall. Anyway, I digress. I've seen a lot of birds of prey lately, but I've never seen one this beautiful, because this one's illustrated by Aaron Reynolds. And he's expanding his wings as if he's about to attack. And underneath, and this is the topical bit, it says, selfish fuckers like you got us into this mess. All right, bird, let's not go there. We're all trying to get along, bird. But if you feel that way and you like funny things, go check out effinbirds.com. We thank Aaron and Effin' Birds so many million times for their support of Soft Revolution. You are fucking enabling this shit. And it's just,
and he's being used.
It's for money.
He's also being used. His mental illness and his narcissism is being used
media as well.
And I think it's important for us to engage even with the crazy, and to, I'm going to purposefully not dismiss that. Of course, I just want to say openly, of course, white lives matter. Of course, all lives matter. Nobody is saying that they don't. If there's a march against breast cancer, you don't also come up and say, what about AIDS?
Sorry, I'm just laughing because at this point in history, Allie, if I'm completely honest, just to equal things out a little bit, if I'm being totally honest, white guys' lives matter just slightly less.
We can't talk like that. No. And you know, to be quite honest, I like to make a more elegant argument to my political friends, in which I say, listen, you cannot win any election if all you're doing is vilifying white people.
No, right? Certainly. And I'm joking to some degree, but fuck, man. Everybody knows white lives matter because white people run everything. You don't have to remind us that white lives matter.
My point is that Kanye thinks he's making some huge fucking wow. Right. Look at me, like, yo. Yeah. It's like, you're an idiot. You're a fucking idiot. You know what? Express your genius in your music. You're not doing that much anymore. Express your genius in your fashion. You're doing a bunch of that, but most of the time you're just fucking now just having Twitter and Instagram wars with people. So yeah, you know what? I'm at this point where it's like, Kanye, that's enough.
He's been eating.
Thank you for the college dropout, graduation, Yeezus. Thank you, but good night.
I mean, there's social media at its very worst. There's what it does to people at its very worst.
Oh, especially like that. Give him a fucking smartphone and an Instagram account. Look what it's done to him.
Yeah, it's completely fucked him. And
he can't discern.
And so I think it's the perfect time to do a 180 and to talk about how social media can do incredible things and how it can represent incredible aspirations and incredible ideas. Before we go
to Tara, I want to talk about bros, though. I want to talk quickly about Billy, the Billy Eichner and bros thing.
Do you? Now, Allie, I heard a rumor that you didn't go and see Bros last week. And
I'm homophobic, man. Of course I don't
like to think about what that says about your attitude towards gay people, Allie.
Yeah. For people who don't know, Bros, by all accounts, an incredible film. It was like the talk of TIFF. People who saw it during TIFF were like, this movie is just an incredible, movie. It's so funny.
He's famous for Billy Eichner, Billy on the Streets.
As good as any rom-com that Judd Apatow has done.
He wrote this thing and he stars in it, right?
Yeah.
And it's like the first major studio rom-com that is gay, right?
I don't know if it's like the first. I don't know the exact details.
I saw a Christmas movie last year with Kristen Stewart in it that was about her and her girlfriend, and the girlfriend had to disguise the fact that she was her girlfriend. It was great.
Was that on TV or was that a studio movie?
I guess it might have streamed. It was a good movie, though. I wish I could remember the name of it. It was fun.
Well,
anyway,
all right,
whatever.
Well, the issue here is that it bombed. It was in about 3,500 theaters. So that means that the studios are really anticipating this was going to be a hit, and it bombed. It made $4.8 million over the weekend. That is abysmal. Billy Eichner obviously was like that sucked for him. And he went on Twitter and he basically was attributing.
Wherever you go, when you have something you're going to regret saying, head over to Twitter.
He basically made an argument that the reason why this movie did not succeed was because of homophobia. And if
straight
it's like,
people,
if you're
he literally
not,
said straight people didn't go and see this movie.
Well, here's the thing. I grew up in the theater. We're in the arts community. We have a lot of gay friends, and I don't know a single one of them who saw this film. And I think the issue isn't because they're not going to see it. Am I right? No. I think I'm like just like all actors. I'm like, you're missing the issue here. The reason why people did not see this movie is the same reason they're not going to see the Julia Roberts, George Clooney movie that's coming out tomorrow, because
people are not going
to the movie theater if there isn't a Marvel superhero, if there isn't fucking, you know, Tom Cruise. because our habits have changed profoundly since the pandemic. You are competing with the couch, you are competing with, you know, TikTok, you're competing with these streaming services. And I think the issue here is that for every dollar that the studio spends marketing individual products, they need to spend $2 marketing the going to a movie theater. And the same rule applies to Broadway. Broadway's audiences are at 70% pre-pandemic levels. It's not because people don't want to see certain shows. It's because people don't even have it in their brain that why should I get up from my couch, organize a sitter, go to this place with a lot of other people? Am I going to get COVID? Am I not going to get COVID? Do I care about COVID? You have to remind people what it is about these experiences, because I have gone to movie theaters. It's amazing sharing an experience, particularly a comedy. I have seen some incredible concerts now that, you know, things have happened. They've been joyous. I was so lucky to be able to be at the closing performance of Come From Away's Broadway run, to be in that room with that show and those people. I'm telling you, it is fucking worth
like
it. It's amazing. There's nothing like it. But nobody is making that argument anymore. Instead, they believe that if you build it, they will come. No longer. No longer. And I will also say that this is soon going to happen in the Marvel world. It will soon happen everywhere. People say, fuck it, I'm going to just sit, chill on my couch and
watch
it.
Well, I also think that, I think Billy Eichner missed a point, really, because I think the people who stayed away were the people over 35, and that was kind of the demographic he was aiming at. You know, he's like a,
sure.
he's a 35, 36 year old guy. And it's very much a kind of late 90s, early 2000s style rom-com. And it's all directed by the guy who did Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And it's very much in that Hollywood tradition. But those films are films that were huge back in the day when Jennifer Aniston was 30. That's a different demographic. I don't think it's about homophobia. I think it's about, you might be a bit long in the tooth, Billy. You know what I mean? Like, if that movie had been made with Timothy Chalamet, it might have done huge numbers. I mean, not to be mean about his age.
I don't think so. It doesn't matter. I don't think
that young people, actually, what I'm seeing anyway in my world of rock and roll, if you're selling tickets to young people, you're not having a lot of trouble right now. They're coming out in droves. It's people, Gen, it's millennials that are staying away, right? No, it's Gen Y. It's like, it's millennials. It's sort
it's
of
me.
28 to 40 year old people that are staying away.
Yeah.
And I think it's all those factors, but I agree. I think that, you better find yourself an amazing marketing person, and you better make the argument, and you better make it semi-affordable. I mean, Jesus Christ, Broadway's just ridiculous. I'm thinking about taking my kid to Broadway because she's obsessed. I'm going to drop, man, if I see three shows, I'm going to drop like $3,000.
You're fucked,
man.
I was in New York for a week and I looked at the TKTS booth and I was like, even
ridiculous.
$90 US? That's insane. Let's go to Tara. And the other mistake that I think he made was this. Actually claiming that this was because homophobia doesn't help, because it wasn't about homophobia. It's just there's like big market factors at play here. But if you tell people, if you make it so that people think it's because of that, have fun when the next filmmaker wants to make a queer-based
It feels like a bit of a cell phone, because it seemed like his explicit project was to make a mainstream comedy that welcomed everybody in that happened to be about two gay men. And now he's suddenly gotten into a culture war thing instead of just being like, I don't know why people didn't come. I hope they come next weekend. That's what Tom Cruise would have said, Billy. That's why he's top dog. Well, that and the cult as well. The cult helps.
Yeah,
I think.
But Tom Cruise also, when you first, you haven't seen Top Gun, but when the second Top Gun starts.
I have now seen it. It is the worst film I've ever seen.
I loved it.
We'll talk about it.
I loved it.
We'll
but
talk about
did you
it
see it in the theater
day.
Or did you
I
see
saw
a theater
it on the
or
plane
no?
And I just.
Oh!
I literally
No.
You know what? Sometimes I forget how important it is to smash the patriarchy, and then I watch a film like that, and I'm like, let's just imprison
white
guys until we can work until we can figure out what the hell
only
is going on.
Only you can say that. But what I will give credit to Tom for is when you saw it in the movie theaters before it started. I mean, let's talk about his narcissism. But when it before started, Tom Cruise comes and is like, "Hi, I'm Tom." And he like basically thanks people for coming together, coming to the theater, experiencing this, talking about this is how we made the movie, this is the technology we use, this is why. And you know, Tom Cruise is all like, he spent like $20 million to create an ad campaign to tell you to turn off the motion smoothing on your TV. Like, this is a guy.
If I had seen that in the theater, I would have left at that point. I wouldn't have even seen the film. I just would have been like, that's it.
The normal well-adjusted people clapped. So, but you do you, bro. You do you.
Ever the rebel. I love a rebel. Speaking of which, let's talk to Tara Garami.
Tara, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think the first question I want to ask is, where are you right now? And I think the next subsequent question would be, where do you wish you were right now?
Hi, Edgen. Thank you so much. Thank you guys so much for having me. I am in Los Angeles, and like I have for the past 12 years of my life, since the last time I was there, I wish that I was in Tehran.
Mm-hmm. So right now there is, I would say, the largest woman-led women's rights movement happening across the world. And we had a Ukrainian-Canadian artist when the war was starting there, and we asked him the same question I would ask you, that if you were there, would you be on the streets right now?
I don't know. That's a really hard question. I don't know.
And so what makes you wish that you were there, Tara? If it's because when you said that, my heart leapt a little bit, because I look at you and I think it's a good chance that you would be in a great deal of danger if you were there. So what makes your heart want to be in Tehran right now?
The fact that it's my country, it's my soil. Mm. It's the soil from which I came. It's where my ancestors are from. It's the when I smell certain things that are Tehran, it's like my body comes alive, you know? I left when I was six, and I'd left once when I was two, and then came back and left when I was six. So I've actually spent maybe a total of 4 years of my life in Iran, but I went back every summer until 2010. And I don't know, it's really hard to explain it, and I've tried before, but there's this connection to where you're from that's inexplicable. It's just everybody speaks your language. Everybody's like your mom and your dad and your uncle and everything. You know, it's the people, it's the culture, it's the food, it's the smells, it's the tastes, it's the energy, the vibrations of Tehran that I've been yearning for 12 years. Mm-hmm. So to not be there now, where they're having this huge movement, is it's hard.
Now, I just want to say, like, obviously, you know, you're an artist, you're brilliant. I mean, we're not political analysts here, but there is a sense that from my family, from the people whom I speak to in Iran, from expatriates, that this time feels different. Like, you know, there was the Green Movement, of course, that unfortunately did not lead to what I think we were looking for. But why is it that you think, either inside yourself or what you're hearing, that this time something is different?
Well, first of all, earlier you said that this is about women's rights. And I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to say it's about women's rights, but really it's about human rights.
Of course.
And what's going on that I think is different this time, again, I'm not a political analyst. I'm not anybody. I'm literally just an actor in LA.
But artists understand the room. They feel the room. They understand things that sometimes, like, data doesn't tell you. You know what I mean? So that's why our perspective is valuable. So go ahead.
You're right. Absolutely. I think this time it's different because, first of all, Gen Z is at the forefront. Right. Gen Z, who grew up with all of the information in the world in the palm of their hands. So they know that there's better out there for them. They know that they know better than we do. They know better than we did at their age. They have way more information. I think Gen Z is a huge part of this. I think also it's a movement without a leader. And that means they have no one to tear down. The movement is the anger and the frustration of the people. that the regime can't take down. They're not going to kill, they could kill a leader, but they're not going to kill the anger and frustration of the people. So that's why I think the energy feels different, because it's like, how are they going to kill that?
It doesn't, that's such a fascinating point that you're making, that what I, utterly ignorant to the extent that I live here and that I'm a white person and I don't have connections with Iran besides my dear friends who are Iranian. When I'm looking at this online, when I'm seeing these incredible, I mean, first of all, just like as someone who fucking loves it when people stand up to bullies, like these girls and women are the most punk fucking people I have ever seen in my life. They are so hardcore and so fucking cool. I'm going to cry just talking about it. Like, as a person who loves rock and roll and rebellion, to see these girls do this shit is just thrilling. So it feels different in that way to me, but I can also see that really is the salient thing, is that it is a 40 million headed creature. There's not someone that they can say, this person's stirring up trouble, this woman is the problem. They created the problem, right? I mean, they made this problem by murdering this poor young woman for doing nothing so much as wearing a hijab.
43 years. I mean, it's right. Not just murdering one person. It's 43 of course. Years of oppression and of murdering people and unjust human rights violations for 43 years. I mean, I could sit here and name like hundreds of things.
We don't have time. We don't have the time to, like, you know, but you know, you talked about Gen Z and you talked about the youth of this, and we were having a conversation before we started to record that, you know, Torque and I, we lament social media because I think social media is destructive. However, I really do think that social media, access to the internet, their savviness, their ability to like use VPNs, put VPNs on their Khale or their Amir or their Amus, like computers. This is a technologically savvy group of folk. Mm. And I think, can you talk about how you think that has really energized and been a big part of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been skeptical of how important social media can be in a movement like this. But I've seen actual change happen from us amplifying the voices in Iran from people outside of Iran. Because I don't know if you guys have mentioned this, but there's no internet access in Iran right now. So what they do, and they do this every time there's an uprising, is the Islamic Republic cuts off internet access to people.
How are these videos getting out of the country then?
Geniuses, these kids that figure out the VPNs that last for an hour and they upload the videos and they know. They're so smart. They're so savvy. And they have internet for a few hours a day, because think about how much of their economy runs on the internet.
Right.
So they can't cut it off all the time, but they're just so smart and on top of it. But sorry to your point, Ali Jun, it's been vital. This us outside of Iran, the diaspora, just taking these videos and sharing them widely, talking about it, talking about specific things and making sure people hear about it and spread it, has been so influential in making even the tiniest little changes that could get us somewhere.
So I want to talk about that because I was a little bit skeptical of like, what's, you know, what's the point? You know, I get it. Like, I'm like, I have sisters, I have you, I want that regime gone. Like, I get it. But I have to be honest, you know, Tara called me out. She messaged me on Instagram and she's like, as she always puts Ali Jun, and like, and basically in Farsi, it's like, Jun means like my dear, my soul. Like, she's like, Ali Jun, nothing about Iran. And I was like, you know what? She's right. And I had to like spark the thought of like, hey, even though I'm not there, even though I wish I could be there, even though I wish I could be joining that situation, I have to bring awareness to this. And I want you to talk about why it's important for me, an Iranian born who lives in Canada right now, Torque, a white dude in Vancouver. Why is it important for all of us who aren't there? What is the difference that it actually makes? For us to be addressing this.
The world of a difference. torque. If you post about Iran and one person who thought Iran was the same as Iraq, or one person that pronounces Iran as Iran, learns something about this country and the human rights violations that have been happening there for 43 years, that makes the world of a difference. Mm-hmm. That's all we need. People keep asking me, where can I donate? What can I do? Mm. I have right now, I watch, you said, Tork, that these girls are so badass. They're so punk. They're so cool. If I showed you the pictures I have seen of these little girls' dead bodies, they're dead bodies. I've seen the pictures. They're circulating everywhere on the internet. The atrocities that this government is doing to these girls, to these men and women, to these people that are literally using their basic human right to protest, it's so beyond fathomable for the Western world that it's almost like they ignore it. Yeah. And I just want to put it in their faces. This is happening right now, 2022. And your brother and your cool Iranian friends that show you Persian food, that have the cool music, you know, it's their families.
It's what you're saying right now is resonating with something that I heard yesterday. I wish I could remember the name of the woman who was speaking, but she was an Iranian activist who's been an activist for a long time against the hijab and the niqab, which she called the burqa. And she
That in Iran. That's not mandatory in Iran.
I know that. She was an activist.
I think she was equating them the same. I know who you're speaking about.
She
views it as the same. A hijab, niqab, burqa, it's all the same term.
Well, that was what I was sort of going to ask about. This, she was talking a lot about Islam, about Sharia law. And she was, I think what I could gather was that this woman had faced criticism within the community, and charges that she was Islamophobic because she did equate the hijab with the niqab, and she did say that any choice that women have taken away from them is equal in its crime. How does Islam fit into what's happening with these young women right now? Is it something?
This has nothing to do with Islam.
Okay, so you reject what she, you reject that point of view to some degree.
I love her, and
say her name for me. I'm so sorry
because it's Masi Ali Nejad. I think that's who you're talking about.
Yes, yeah,
that's
she was on Bill Maher last week. Yeah,
and if you actually listen to what she says, that's not what she's saying. Yes, it is about it is about a group of dictators taking Sharia law, which is an ancient Islam. It's just as if it's like suddenly the U.S. becoming Catholic, and we all have to go to mass, and we all have to do these certain, you know what I mean? Like it has nothing to do with Catholicism. It's about the abuse of Catholicism. This has nothing to do with Islam. My father is Muslim. My father is practicing. He prays. My father, even though he is the most religious person I know, never in my life has he even mentioned hijab to me. That's my choice. It has nothing to do with Islam. It has to do with dictatorship abusing a spiritual thing to oppress people because they can, because they're playing on people's beliefs.
Are you concerned that the regime will use that kind of conversation against the girls on a public relations level, that they'll try to convince the West that this is an anti-Islamic movement?
But don't you find, Tara, that it's not working? Their shtick, like we in the business we call it shtick.
Yes.
Like, you know, this is about like Khamenei, the supreme leader, which is just, I can't even believe that exists. But his thing was that, you know, this is Israel. This is America. This is like, and I feel like those excuses are no longer
working. Why people, these little girls that you're killing, literally actual little girls, minors that you're killing, you're bashing their skulls. That's what they're not walking around saying nuclear deal, America, Israel. They're walking around stomping on your face and burning your picture. Huh?
Yeah.
Israel?
Yeah.
I know. You're not saying anything about Islam. You don't hear those people on the streets bashing Islam. A lot of them are Muslim.
Yeah, there's a lot of women who wear hijab who are for this because they're ultimately saying that it's like
it's people's choice.
No one's actually saying let's eradicate the hijab. If somebody wants to wear hijab, at the end of the day,
it's your choice.
Iran is a majority Shia Muslim country, but I think it's just a matter of how do you understand, interpret, and experience that spiritual experience.
Well, and Iran has a long history of being a democracy, right? And a place where people could live.
Never a democracy.
Yeah. But a place where
Torque's getting the Persian sandwich right now.
A westernized version of a Muslim country. Was it not
so
in the 50s, 60s, 70s? No,
it was.
Sorry for my ignorance, but this is why.
No, it's good. No. We believe that we have to, like, as to your point, Tara, was like every time we can have these moments and let people know what this country is, what the history is. So please go ahead, Tara.
Yeah. So in the 40s, 50s, 60s, during there were the Pahlavi dynasty, which was a monarchy. There was progression forward. Absolutely. There was no hijab. Actually, hijab was banned for a while, which was also a problem because people wanted to wear hijab because it is, you know, there are Muslims. So yes, it was a forward, progressive place, Iran. And then when the regime came in 1979, what people were actually protesting when the 1979 revolution happened was that they wanted democracy. And if you're actually interested in how all of this happened, I really recommend a documentary called Coup 53. And you can find it online.
We'll put that in our notes that Crow sends out. Make sure people have a link to it.
Coup 53. If you really want to know what happened in Iran, this documentary is an unbiased, very well done, very well researched documentary that'll tell you the whole history. I'm not a historian. I just know what I know. That's the problem with Iran is there's never been a democracy. They were promised a democracy with this regime, but they were lied to.
Uh-huh. So through your eyes, do you think this is a democratic movement? Where is this centered in? Like, where does it?
Human rights.
So, but where, what do you think the, is there a goal so far? Like, is there a defined end point to this, to overthrow the regime, to, Is there? Can you get a sense of where the kids are taking this? Like, what their point of winning is? How do they win this against such a brutal regime?
I think it's so bad, Tor. Like, I think it's so bad that the only thing they can think of is regime change. They need these people out. We don't know who's going to replace them. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know.
But you can't let men who murder children stay in charge of the country. That's just
for 43
years. An impossible situation.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk about, we were talking about this before we started to record. There's a lot of, like, pushback. I remember my brother-in-law sent me an article and we were talking about the New York Times. and the New York Times was trying to make an argument that this is ultimately, like, about economics. And, you know, it's so funny because they would always say the Russian Revolution was about the price of bread and the American Revolution was actually about King George, you know. As they say in Hamilton, King George turns around, runs a spending spree, you know. But actually, at the core, it's not. It's not. And we were saying that on the streets right now, it's Zan Zindagi Azadi, which is women, life, freedom. So can you please, like, elaborate on that?
Yeah. Again, I'm definitely not a politics person, but this has nothing to do with sanctions or a nuclear deal. This is 43 years of oppression and human rights violations. This is for all of the gay, lesbian, trans, LGBTQ plus community that are banned and being murdered and hung for being gay. This is for the little
girls. Forced to transition.
Well, no, they're not forced to transition, but it's legal to transition. So there's all these psychological things that come to that where people don't realize, the people think they have to have sex changes because they're gay.
Exactly. Because they're gay. Exactly. So in a way,
it's sick. It's sick. Women can't sing. Women don't have even close to the same rights as men. It's like a sick, messed up, like Taliban level of human rights violations. And it's been overlooked for 43 years. So I don't know, like, what that means, that this has to do with the economy. Like, yes, and the economy is messed up too. Guess what?
Sure,
the economy
is
messed up too. Guess what? People don't have access to medicine. They don't have access to so many things because of heavy sanctions on them. Absolutely. But this has nothing to do with that. Or it does in a very small way.
Are you in touch with your family a lot right now, Tara, in Iran?
I am not. I prefer not to. I know that they're okay, but I would rather just stay away from them so that what I'm doing doesn't affect them in any way.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that's a concern, right? Is that I'm assuming that anybody, I mean, there's such a huge Iranian community in Vancouver as well now. There's tons of Iranians. I'm assuming those people, when they're calling home, they're being monitored, right? That's standard?
I think the assumption is always there, and I wouldn't put it past anyone to monitor Iranians. So, yes.
Which accentuates the need for this social media dissemination, I guess, even more, right? Because even if you have a direct link with Iran right now, you may not be able to access that link because you're putting that link in danger if you access them. So you really do have to kind of build an online community outside of the people you actually physically know. Can you tell us a little bit about anything you know about what Iranian artists are doing right now in the midst of all of this, whether they're participating in these protests? And what you as an artist, like, when this kind of thing, when life and death enters the life of an artist, when the events of the world supersede your life as an artist, where do you put it as an artist, as an actor? Do you feel like there's anything you can do with how much emotion and how much pain and anger and sadness that you're feeling right now? I know that's a heavy question, but we like to go there on this show because it's about art.
Yeah, of course. I was talking about this with my mom yesterday, and my mom said that artists are the sound of the hearts of people.
Mm.
And in Persian, that's very poetic. In English, it kind of sounds weird, but it's true. It's like we are the heartbeat of the now. We express the heartbeat of now, of what people are feeling now. And my entire career since I wrote a one-woman show when I was 21.
Nominated for a Governor General's Award, by the way. Just, I got to throw that in there.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Only Canadians know what that is, so thank you.
I know. I think they're the only people who listen to this show. Or there's a few Americans.
Okay.
No. We got like a round there. Yeah.
Go on. But, you know, I've dedicated truly my entire career to making Iranian culture known to non-Iranians and to making Iranian people in the Iranian diaspora helping them find a place where we all connect and we can have a joint identity. Because as a multi-hyphenate, there's so many different things that happen when you're finding your identity. You either become like too Canadian. Like I went into, when I was a teenager, I did not want to be Iranian at all. I said that I was Italian. I hated being Iranian. And then, or I went way more into being Iranian and became super Iranian and then rejected being Canadian. But the truth is I'm both. And now I live in LA and there's parts of that in me too. So it's like about reconciling. I dedicated my whole career to reconciling these multi-hyphenate identities. That's really important to me. But the number one hyphenate in my identity is my Iranian identity. I really believe in generational trauma, and the trauma that's in my body is the trauma of being Iranian. So my loyalties, my concern, my everything as an artist, but also just like as a human being, are with that country, are with mm-hmm. those people. And if it means when this news broke, I was on vacation with my husband in Spain, and then we went to mm-hmm. Portugal. And if I tell you, I could not tell you one thing that we saw there. I was just like this the entire time. And guess what? My husband is Iranian American, and he understood. He would just mm-hmm. be like, he'd just take my phone for a second and be like, hey, can I take a picture of you in front of this monument? Like, it was, there is nothing more important than what's happening right now.
And my brother-in-law said something really fascinating to me, and it made me cry. And because, again, we're all products of a revolution. We're all out of that country because a revolution happened in 1979. And he said to me, he's like, Ali, me and your sister, somehow, some way, we're going to be involved in this next revolution. I don't know what it is. I don't know how, but from here, some way, somehow, we're going to be involved in this. And I think that's that connection that you're talking about, where you're like, I'm not there, but I'm there, and I'm going to touch it.
This is something important that I'd love you both to talk about. Is one thing I do know about Iran is that art is deeply embedded in what it means to be a Persian. And my friends here in Vancouver who are Iranian, they are a pharmacist and a professor of pharmacology, but both of them wanted to be artists. One wanted to be a poet and one wanted to be a musician, and the government kind of made them go to pharmacology school, and they became pharmacists. But they talk constantly about poetry, about music, about its meaning within the story of being Persian. Mm-hmm. And in these protests, time and time again, another thing that is blowing my mind is how often art is being used, dance particularly, is being used by these young women to express this protest and this sense of yearning for freedom. Can you talk a bit about what that is? Why are those young women dancing? What does that mean to them?
They're not allowed to dance. Music, right. Western music is banned in Iran. They're not allowed to sing. They're not allowed to dance publicly. So when they're burning the mandatory hijab, they're also, you know, dancing around a fire in an act of protest. Poetry, sorry, Adijan, if you had something to say, but poetry,
no, go ahead.
Is a huge part of our culture and something that we've held on to for dear life in the past 43 years, to be like, hey, the Islamic Republic is not Iran. The Islamic Republic is the Islamic Republic. This is Iran. Hafez, Saadi, Rumi, Ferdowsi, these great poets, this is our culture. This music mm-hmm. is our culture. These paintings are our culture. These Gugush. Plays are our culture.
Your t-shirt there, I love Gugush.
Gugush for president.
Indeed.
So, you know, this music, I have no reason as someone who grew up in Canada to love Gugush and know every single word of every single Gugush song off by heart. Sorry, I forgot English for a second. But I do, because it connects me to my culture. She is mm-hmm. my culture. So mm-hmm. I it's very, very important, our culture, to us. And like you said, I'm just going to correct you, Torque, if that's okay. It's not the government.
Please do. I'm speaking from a place of ignorance, as I said.
You are the lavash. You are the lavash in our sandwich. It's fine.
Yeah. It's
okay. He's actually the middle. We're the lavash, Ali. He's like the...
I guess we're the lavash. Yeah.
You're like the
Kuku Sabzi.
You know, it's also cultural for Iranians to make their kids be pharmacists. It's more cultural than it is anything. Mm. My dad wanted me to be an eye surgeon, and my mom really wanted me to be a journalist. I don't know why a journalist. So random. But
I only said that because Nancy, my friend, told me this story of, like, basically, her real name is Nazim. She told me, that she literally went to university and they were like, yeah, no, you can't take English. You're going to go take pharmacy classes. Like that was her experience.
It's so. Called. It's our culture. Is like that's what yeah, they it's culture. Do. They push right. you
Torque, when you become a doctor, you become aga doctor, which is like Mr. Doctor.
Right. Yeah, they
Mr.
want
Engineer. We put you know title on title. We're like wow, oh my
or
god.
Or pharmacist
can you believe
is
it?
Like so, very pharmacist. Prestigious
oh,
in our culture.
My
yeah,
yeah, so right. they, very prestigious.
If they push you in certain directions, absolutely. But art and you know what, my cousins, it's so sweet. They're such talented musicians. I can't even tell you, but they're all engineers and they're always like, you black sheep of the family, you did the thing we all wanted to do, you know? And right. I'm like, but you have financial security. Anyway, that's a whole,
well, that's certainly, the thing though that, is that, that whole thing is certainly, an experience for artists that goes beyond any cultural boundaries. I think,
yeah,
we all find ourselves being the people at the dinner table where people are like, so what do you actually do though for a living? What the fuck do you actually
well,
do?
I want to talk about Tara, I want your thoughts on this. I want to talk about the cultural significance of the Mehmuni. A Mehmuni Torque is a family party. And it's what's amazing about it is that growing up every single week, if you're in Iran, it would be your family. But if you find the other families that have immigrated to Canada. And every week you would get together, you would dress up. You know, the shoes are so shiny, the perfume is so vibrant, and that's just the men. And you would, you know, you would experience a lot of dancing. You would experience a lot of food. And then when that party was over towards the end and when you were sipping your tea, you would hear an uncle or an aunt recite Hafez and Rumi. And when I see these protests, and in Iran right now, I will tell you, no matter what the government denies them, in their homes, a Persian house party, like Tara, if you want an idea to pitch to Netflix, it should be called Persian House Party. And you literally go and you show extravagant like house parties. But what I see is I go, listen, these people are bringing their private finally into public. These, what they're doing is what they do in their homes. And I think that's also a part of it. It's like, fuck you. This is my identity. Dance, poetry, love, openness, expression. That's who we are. And that a regime has denied them that. Hmm. I think. And also when they open up their phones and they see the rest of the world moving in a direction, I think if it hit them that they say, you know what? That's enough. That's enough. It's time to be me. So as much as I view it as like a deliberate thing, because of course you are not allowed to dance there publicly, I also go, these people are being their true selves that they are. But yeah, I mean, Torque, one day I would love to invite you to a Persian Mehmuni. I think
I would
it would
love to come.
You've never experienced anything like it.
Why is this stuff so rooted in why
sorry,
is
Sorry, Tara, go ahead. Sorry,
go ahead. Go ahead, Tara.
Tara was gonna say something. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I have a group of friends here. When you were saying that, it really warmed my heart because I finally have a group of friends that are all Iranian. And I never really had Iranian friends in Toronto, and in LA I do, and they're all artists and they're all Iranian. And once every couple of weeks, we all get together and we have a pizza party, and one person always ends up singing, and then we all sing, and then
and there's
we
always
just,
dancing.
There's some dancing, but mostly we just hang out, and it's the best thing that's nourished my soul more than anything else ever. So,
yeah. Where does this go? Do you think, you guys? Where does this go? What's going to happen in the next 2 months?
With all due respect,
I'll be quick and say,
yes,
and I'll let you
say.
Have, I'll let you, I don't know where this is going to go, but I do really feel this is the beginning of something vastly different. I don't think it ends in the way that other movements like this ended. I actually think there is a huge momentum. And what I like, I don't, obviously it's so interesting. I want to be like what I like about this, but you always keep the thought of the people that they're killing in your head. But there is something vastly organic about this. And I would always have debates with my parents about like what happens to Iran and how regime change happens. And they would always mention this person will become leader and then this expatriate and this Pahlavi. And I'd always be like, whatever happens, it actually has to happen from them within themselves. The fire has to burn from inside. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I see that. And that to me gives me an immense amount of hope. And Tara, what do you think?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I was going to respectfully say that neither Ellie nor I could tell you. You know, it's a very internal thing. And our role as Iranians outside of Iran is just to give them what they want and amplify what they want. And whatever is coming out of Iran, we just have to be gung-ho for it. It's what they want. It's their land. It's their country. It's their, you know, it's what they want. It's whatever they want.
And it's got to ultimately become not just a movement of women, right? It's got to become a movement of men as well.
It's not just a movement. It is a movement of men. It is. It is a movement of men too. It's everyone. If the men hadn't stood alongside the women, we wouldn't be here now. You know, uh-huh. It's both. It's led by women. It's been led. It was led by the death of Mahsa Amini. And now so many names of young girls that they've killed after her for protesting, which are heartbreaking. And I really encourage you to visit some of our Instagram pages and look at their faces and say their names and know their names and post about them. It's really important that the world sees their faces, sees that there's just normal 16-year-old girls whose skulls were bashed in for using their human right to protest. So, you know, I really encourage that to your listeners, to you yourself, especially to people who aren't Iranian. This is an important human rights issue that we should all care about the way we cared about George Floyd.
It's all I've been really putting up on my Twitter feed. I don't talk about politics much anymore on Twitter because it's pointless. Great. But I have been doing all I can to amplify the video that I see because it's, to me, you know, it just expresses the absolute height of the human spirit, really. It is a capturing of people at a moment of truth in their lives and a moment of strength that is just absolutely jaw-dropping. So it's,
and Tara,
if nothing else, it's just a way of saying to people, it's possible for you to change the world if you fucking are brave and you dance. Yeah.
And something that's so identifiable to me about what's happening, about the notion of women, life, freedom, is that contrary to what I think a lot of people might think, Persian women... they run the show. You know, there's a song, you know, Dokhtari Runi Mesle Gole. There's a song that comes on Torque. When that song comes on, things get lit. And it's basically like an Iranian woman is like a flower, you know? And my upbringing, my sisters, my niece, my mom, my damn right. That what sparked it was that injustice to Mahsa, of course, because in our culture, it's very matriarchal. At least I've grown up that way in the experiences that I've had. It's like your khale, your amme, your mom, she run the show. And contrary to what a lot of people believe, you know, Iran has, just even Iran right now, it has a high rate of graduate studies, of graduate people who have like masters, and most of them are women, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think like, of course, it's women, life, freedom, and women first, of course.
I just want people to be aware of that. Absolutely. And I also want people to research the origins of Women Like Freedom, which is Janjian Azadi, which is from the Kurdish movement. This is because Mahsa Jina Amini was Kurdish.
Yes. Give us a little précis about why that's important, Tara, if you can, because I was listening to an interview about that just the other day. If you can encapsulate it, how does the Kurdish freedom movement link into what's happening in Iran right now?
Absolutely. I mean, I personally, I don't know that much about it. I know as much as you know, because I've listened to the same interviews. I didn't know a lot. The truth is, if I'm really honest, I didn't know a lot of this stuff until recently.
Right.
No, I didn't know what what women in Kurdistan were doing, what they were fighting for, and that a lot of their independence movement is led by women. That there are all these Kurdish women female soldiers and Zan Zendegi Azadi, woman, mm-hmm. life, freedom, comes from that. So this is also a Kurdish struggle. And uh-huh. we need to talk. There's a lot of intersectionality.
Intersectionality, term,
I've learned now that we need to acknowledge and we need to be aware of. This is, you know, way bigger than you know, we can fathom, like I said, in the West. So mm-hmm. I really just encourage, instead of saying something myself about it and making a mistake, I'd rather just encourage people to research
absolutely.
I just want to thank you so much, Tara, for being here. And this actually leads to the next question. Before you go, can you give, I don't know, like the rundown of what accounts we should be following, what we should be doing on social media. And then you, if you can give us, we like to end our show with an art pick. Yeah. Is there a piece of Iranian art that you think that our listeners should be, you know,
absolutely.
Checking out?
Accounts to follow. Tara Grammy. Just saying. No kidding.
Yeah.
my friend Nazani.
It's a great
Noor,
follow.
Thanks. My friend Nazani Noor is doing a lot. She took over Ellen's Instagram, which was huge. 125 million people saw the protests, the global day of protests, which was October 1st, through Ellen's account that Nazani took over. I think she's on BBC today. Like, she's doing all these interviews and really spreading the word about what's happening in Iran. So I want to shout out Nazani Noor. I want to shout out Nazanin Bonyadi, who's an mm-hmm. activist that we love, and she's an actor. And her stuff is amazing. Honestly, if you just follow the three of us, you'll see all the different accounts. From_Iran that posts things really often. There's mm-hmm. one called 1500 Tasvir, which posts things in Persian, but it's a good place. So there's a ton of them that we post all the time. My art pick would be, if you want to know about the Iranian Revolution, if you're a numbers guy, I would watch Coup 53. I watched uh-huh. Coup 53. And then if you are more of a visuals guy, I would watch Persepolis. The film is by Marjan Satrapi.
Beautiful
film. And the graphic novel is really good. And then for Canadian stuff, we have a lot of really great Canadian theater. But yeah, you could read my play, Mahmoud. It's on
Mahmoud.
It's Canada Press.
Amazing.
It talks a lot about the revolution and from a diaspora perspective. So I just shamelessly self-plug, but it's true. It does talk about
I'm so glad you did, because I can't wait to read the play. And I can feel your passion from thousands of miles away about this, about your country, about the art you love, and about your people. And we're so grateful. I know it's really emotional when we get people on, things are happening, and we get artists on to talk about this stuff. It is extremely generous, because I know it's not just something you see in the news for both of you. It's something that's happening in your lives and in the lives of people you love, and to a place that you love. So we really appreciate your generosity in talking to us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate your generosity in amplifying Iranian voices and putting this out there to your audience. So
you
I really
bet we will.
You too. Thank you.
We're definitely rocking some gougouche at the end of this episode.
Yeah,
for sure.
As
Tara Gharami on the Soft Revolution podcast. What an incredible man. I could feel her passion, commitment to that cause
right?
through the screen. I literally could, man.
It's also amazing that as this podcast has progressed, your pronunciation of her has gotten better. Like,
practice
it's amazing.
Makes perfect,
you know what?
Dally.
I'm going to teach you some Farsi.
Hey,
I think
what
I'm going to do.
Let me say this. You know, we never mentioned that we have now done 100 episodes. A lot of people wrote to me and said, "Hey man, you guys did your 100th episode and didn't even mention it." You know why? Because that's not even a beginning.
That's not what it's about.
It's not about numbers. Even if it was 100 schmundred, you know what I mean?
Hey, did you hear about the controversy of all these podcasts, like paying for listens, like for million, you know, we could have paid and gotten like millions of listens.
I wish I had
known. And we could have like fucked the algorithm.
I wish I had known. Well, never mind. Next podcast. Thank you.
But how amazing was Tara?
Incredible.
How amazing.
Incredible.
Like, just an incredible
and,
woman.
And I obviously learned a lot and revealed my ignorance about so many things about Iran, but,
no, man,
but
I'm so grateful
for the information. And I also think that I'm trying to take in, as someone who has a natural resistance to the idea that posting on social media does much.
Yeah.
That
she changed my mind.
The opposite
a lot
is true in this case, you know, mm-hmm. and that's there is no strict, hard and fast rule about what works when you're trying to run a movement. Some movements are top down, some movements are street movements, but this one can't be without us disseminating that incredible footage of those incredible young women dancing in the streets, burning their hijabs, just being incredible. So if you see that stuff coming across your feed, retweet it or put it up on your Facebook or put it up on your Instagram. Tell your family and friends about what's happening in Iran. Anybody who cares about democracy, freedom, women, peace, love, life should care about what's happening there. Because
you could argue
that Iran is a, you know, in many ways the cradle of lots of what we call civilization and has always been a place where great thinkers, great ideas, great movements have emerged. And that time is happening again right now, and it's incredibly exciting. Yeah. So thank you, Tara, for being here. Okay, what's your art pick this week, Ali?
My art pick is a specific performance in a really great show that I think a lot of people have watched, or if you haven't watched, there's just so much shit out there. So I know you don't have time. But I have, you notice there's like these people that you meet that somehow have the time to have watched everything? And I'm like, what are they doing? What's the vibe?
They don't speak to their family, okay. I guess.
Yeah. Well, Hacks is a show that Hacks is a show that I've like really kind of fallen in love with. I think it's an incredible. Gene Smart is just like the pinnacle of incredible acting.
I've heard about this show.
Oh my God. Just watch it. It's fantastic.
It's about actors,
it's fantastic.
Right?
No, it's about a famous older female comedian who, in order to kind of like revitalize her career, finds a millennial woke writer, and it's like a buddy comedy. It's but about them too. But in the middle of this, there's a performance by this incredible young actress named Megan Stalter, who she plays the assistant to Gene Smart's agent. My God, this is one of the greatest comedic performances. Like it's a performance that like there's no, you're like, oh, this is like an Amy Schumer, or oh, this is like a Joan Rivers. There's something that she's pulling from. She's just pulling from herself. And unbeknownst to me, and this is becoming the case more and more as I approach 40, she was a TikTok star. Everyone already knew about her. And I was telling Kimmy about her. She's like, oh yeah, Ali, me and my friends, we would like quote her all the time. She's huge. I'm like, uh-huh. It just goes to show there's just so much fucking culture
it's
out there.
Crazy.
Like the Try Guys, I don't know. But please watch Hacks and just watch this woman steal every fucking moment.
I'm going to watch it.
And so that's my pick.
Better be good, Ali.
What's yours?
I don't have a lot of time, as you
that's
know.
Great.
Better be good. I've got a lot of 90 Day Fiancé to watch. So this if it's cutting into my 90 Day Fiancé time.
Yeah.
So it better be good. Because there is nothing quite as compelling as watching two people who clearly will definitely not stay together, trying to stay together. That's to be...
That's what our listeners think about this show. I just want you to also know that.
That's why it's so popular. Okay, my art pick is something I saw this week, and it's actually featuring friend of the pod, Nobu Edelman. I saw Nobu's project, Choir, 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 for the first time this week in Vancouver. I've never seen them before. They've been around for years, and I've known Nobu since I was 8 years old. He's a dear friend, but I've never seen their show. And man, if you want to be reminded of how goddamn fun it is to go out at night, go see these guys. What a beautiful, joyful, casual, but also super tight and produced, off-the-cuff, like fun celebration of songs, of songs you know, songs you love, your youth, your memories of, it's just, they're absolutely brilliant. And it's this really, really great hybrid between sort of improvisational comedy, motivational leadership, because they teach you how to sing songs. They teach the whole audience. They do multiple parts. I saw a Queen tribute night, so they were doing crazy multi-vocal parts, and they're brilliant at teaching people really quickly. it's just got so much in it that is about what it means to have fun with other people and what a party is and how much fun it is to sing in a room together. And, you know, I was in this sold out Hollywood theater in Vancouver, about 700 people. Everybody singing their lungs out, you know, and
yeah,
just to be
amazing.
In that state of freedom with people, which I, you know, honestly never knew if we would ever feel that again. So,
yeah.
And there were people there in masks and there were people there not wearing masks and everybody was cool. Everybody was chilling together and having a great time, you know, and no one was judging each other. They were just having fun and singing songs together. And so, yeah, first of all, just go see Choir. If they're in your town, they're in Edmonton tonight, I believe. They're in Calgary tomorrow. So you'll have missed it by the time we publish this pod.
Google
them because they're awesome.
You'll find them.
And, and you know, go see stuff. We're begging you. Go see stuff. Because I'm starting to feel like some of my artist friends are also a little bit culpable in this. Like, I know we don't have a lot of money, guys, but at least go see a goddamn movie. My wife saw Women Talking last night. She says it is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible movie. So I'm really excited.
We
got
to get Sarah on the pod.
I know I'm too shy to ask, but I'll get the nerve up at some point.
She likes you.
Well,
she likes you.
She likes
me
as much
as
anybody could like me. You know, I think she's like is a, it's a strong
word. She must love you.
Okay. So those are our art picks. Choir and Hacks with an amazing performance by, say the actor's name.
Megan Stalter. Find her on TikTok.
And that's the Soft Revolution podcast for another week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Tara Garami for her incredible words and for her time and generosity.
Look at the way.
Yeah, man. Ask me over
my
to one
God.
Of those
Can you believe it?
Big Iranian parties, man. I'll fucking...
Yeah, for sure.
My brother-in-law, bring the Velveeta slices.
Dude, if you are in Toronto and you come to Richmond Hill and you come to a party,
it would be
my brother-in-law
honor.
My dad just want to spend, because they listen to the pod and they're just like, I need to talk to
I want
to.
I want
to
meet
like,
these
just...
guys. I want to sit in the kitchen and have a chat. I saw an incredible photograph of a protest in Richmond Hill the other day. In support
50,000 people, man.
Incredible.
Yeah, damn
Good
fucking
for
right.
you, Richmond Hill. Way to go.
We
love
that's
you all.
Right.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Crow's Theater, as always. Thank you to Effin' Birds, as always. Go to effinbirds.com whenever you're feeling bored and get a laugh. We'll see you next week. We love you. ولی باشه واسه از خود گذاشتن بذار قسمت کنیم تنهاییمونو میون سفره شب تو با من بذار بین من و تو دستای ما ولی باشه واسه از خود گذاشتن شبگرد عاشق تو با اسم شب من آشنایی از اندوه تو با چشم تو پیداست که از ایل و تبار عاشقایی تو رو میشناسم ای سردرگری بود غریبگی نکن باه به من من شکستت و بسپار به دسته نوازش های دسته عاشق من بذار قسمت کنیم تنهاییمونو میون صفحه شب تو با من بذار بین من و تو دستای ما کلی باشه واسه از خود گذشتن بذار قسمت کنیم تنهاییمونو میون سفره شب تو با من بذار بین من و تو دستای ما کلی باشه واسه از خود گذشتن پیش قلبت شناختم تو قلبت قلب عاشقای دنیاست تو با من گوشی از گل برگ و بوسه منو به جشن نور و آینه بردید
شدیم تنهاییمونو میون صفحه شب تو با من بذار بین من و تو دستای ما کلی باشه واسه از خود گذشتن بذار قسمت کنیم تنهاییمونو میون صفحه شب تو با من بذار بین من و تو دستای ما کلی باشه واسه از خود گذشتن کمک کن جاده های مه گرفته من مسافر رو از تو نگیرن کمک کن تا کبوترهای خسته روی یخ بستگی شاخه نمیرن کمک کن از مسافرهای عاشق سراغ مهربونی رو بگیری کمک کن تا برای هم بمونی کمک کن تا برای هم بمیریم بذار قسمت کنیم تنهایی مورو میون سفره شب تو با من بذار بین من و تو دستای ما کلی باشه واسه از خود گذشتن بذار قسمت کنیم تنهاییمونو میون سفره شب تو با من بذار بین من و تو دستای ما کلی باشه واسه از خود گذشتن